Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought a high level of standard of hosting an intelligent discussion, hopefully intelligent discussion anyway, of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Let me introduce the Brieflies and our small talk guest today. Starting at the board is our retired Alaska Airlines captain, certified flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, Treetop Landing Aficionado, Voice of Vachon Board Member, West Texas Roughneck, Eastern Montana Band Member, and former, yes, it is not an oxymoron, Military Intelligence Specialist. Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Wow. That was a long one. Man, oh man.
I decided to go back about a year and dig out all the things.
All of those. Oh, that was fun. Thanks.
So we're giving click and clack a little bit of competition.
There you go. There you go.
So joining Truman is Truman's wingmate and fellow treetop flyer, former tow truck repo man, teamster, ice cream maker, apprentice auto mechanic, Pinkerton guard of the Pan Am's first 747, high fashion women's shoe salesman, I think it was, arbitrator, mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar, former constitutional law professor, and assistant Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, Bruce. I feel slighted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How could you?
You forgot Christmas tree salesman. Actually, that's never made it on my list, but that is another one of my
achievements. We will add that. Also joining us is the 1995 graduate of Vachon High School, 1999 Scripps College alum, and president of the Scripps Associated Students, former director of the GLBT Community Center of Colorado, author of the Macaw Island Mysteries, and contributor to Wild, Uncivilized Tales from Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, playwright, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Commissioner, fantastic director of Islands for Fairy Action, all-around community tour, and our official full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Whew, that's me. I'm exhausted.
It keeps going.
I'm exhausted.
We got to add to these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of fun to revisit it. I did miss the Pinkerton security guard.
Oh, yeah. That was in San Fran, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One of those unemployed summers, right?
That's right. Yeah. You work double shift in those 16 hours and to make a few bucks.
I want to know more about the ladies' shoe sales.
So does everybody.
Oh, there are a few stories there.
And zooming in from ? Kevin, where are you zooming in from?
Hmm? Oh, wait. Sorry. Say it again.
We are in Eagle Harbor in foggy Bainbridge Island today.
Ooh, are you catching up on our down boats? You fixing some boats from Washington State ferries up there?
We're looking at them. There's plenty to be had if only they ran.
Yeah, if you could just tow one on down, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can hook up one. Yeah, that would be something.
All right. Zooming in from Bainbridge Island is the Voice of Vachon, Indivisible Vachon, and Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity and Social Justice and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon Moray Island Community Council, is our tireless defender of democracy, who strives to create a livable planet overseen by government we can all at least appreciate or tolerate. Kevin Jones.
So all right, Kevin, least but not last. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And I'm historian Bruce Hallman.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Yeah, world traveler.
Right. Yeah.
Former professor.
We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
He has a nice name.
Dean of Evergreen. Right. Come on.
Hallman? No, I got Bruce.
All right, okay. That's right, yeah. My middle name is Morser. No.
Yeah, there you go.
Joining us today is Bruce Morser, artist, illustrator, extraordinaire. Welcome, Bruce.
No, great to be here. Thanks, Bruce.
We'll get more into your list as we go along.
That other Bruce.
Yeah. So before we jump into talking about Bruce's work on Vashon, let's take a moment and check in with everybody about their New Year. Whoops, about this was an old script. What was your New Year? Yeah, it's probably a good question. What was your New Year's resolution, and where are you now?
Oh boy, failed yes, on day two.
So what happened this past week with you? Let's go with Amy.
Ooh, you got me. You nailed me. There was so much going on Vashon, and I just enjoyed. I enjoyed the cool fall evenings. Yeah, hanging out with friends and waiting for the marine layer to burn off.
Yeah.
I think was the biggest piece of that. But I am looking forward this week to going to see The Hatmaker's Wife. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward to that. Mm-hmm.
These are some of my favorite days when it sort of starts out. It's cloudy. It's overcast. By noon, it burns off. By late afternoon, it's 70 degrees and sunny. It's sort of perfect Pacific Northwest weather.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, just sitting on the deck watching Quartermaster Harbor and the seals and the birds. And it's not bad. It's not a bad life.
Not bad at all. What? So, Craig, how about you?
Well, in answer to your original question, I had... A New Year's resolution to lose 10 pounds, and I've only got 20 to go.
And I found those.
That's right. I think I could see them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ba-boom. No, there's a couple of things, and Truman, I'm sure, will talk about one of them as well. One was church at the O-Space. Oh, my gosh. It was just one of the best reviews that I think they've almost ever done. Every skit was a hit. Sometimes they're just like Saturday Night Live. Some are a hit, some are a miss. This time they were basically all hits. And I had to give credit to Richard Rodgers, who wrote the lyrics to one of the songs that was sung called Vashmoria, the mythical land of Ashmoria. So our own Richard Rodgers from the Voice of Vashon is very active in doing a lot of the work on those, the tomfoolery that goes on there. The other thing... This last week was I went and to the wine shop, Cliff's old brewery up here, and just wonderful. Chris Anderson was there with Gordy Ryan, and one other individual who unfortunately whose name eludes me right now, and they were singing a lot of the songs. Chris Anderson of the Coop, who owns the Coop property, was he wrote. Chris Anderson wrote many of these songs, and some of them were just great. He did one song that he had never done before. I just laughed all the way through. It was called The Cliché Blues. Mm-hmm. And in that song, he probably rattled off about 100 clichés. So it was, and some mixed metaphors while we were at it. So it was a good week.
Oh, it sounds like a great week. Hey, Bruce, how about you?
My week sort of started like Wednesday or Thursday as I slowly emerged from the post-P2P fog.
Oh, yeah.
Where I literally, I'm just shot at the end of that thing. I was just telling Craig before the show began that I have never been so glad to have the last 2 hours of the event canceled in my life. I made it to about Liza Beulah, and everyone was instructed to come home. It's over. Stop riding. The whole deal. And I was still reluctant to give it up. I was going to press on to get my streamers at the last checkpoint, and I didn't care if anyone was there. But as I was leaving Liza Beulah, they said, and they took all the streamers back to Jensen Point. All right, I'm going to Jensen Point. So it was great to get that in the rearview mirror. It went well. It was kind of a wonderful event. It made its usual money. It was Too bad it, someone had sort of fooled with the course ahead of time, which added a bunch of paint to the road. So from P2P, we apologize for that. We really apologize. That's unfortunate.
Tell us a little bit about that. What actually happened?
It was funny. I was getting up in the morning, you know, about 5 in the morning to head to the course. And I'm one of the course setters and out there with my signs and my little arrows and my spray paint. And as I was leaving the house, I realized, wait a minute, this arrow's in the wrong direction. Like, what? Who did this? And so I went back to the house and got some paint. And this is important to get this right. You do not want riders who've never been to the island before getting lost. And so I busily, you know, marked out the wrong turn and corrected it and so on. Then I got to the starting line and started on the course. And then all of a sudden, there's another erroneous marking. And it suddenly dawned on me, it's like, oh, this isn't a mistake. This is sabotage. This is someone trying to have fun with us. And all of a sudden, we had a couple of hundred people just kind of circling around. I got off the bike and started directing people. And these poor souls would come up the hill and said, this is the second or third time I've been here.
Oh, no.
How do I get out? So I was like, all right, here's the deal. You got to follow this. You got to do that. So we corrected it, and we got everyone heading in the right direction. But it was total confusion. In the process, though, the sad thing is whoever put the paint down, they didn't. We use chalk paint, so it just washes off. It takes a month or two, but it washes off. But whoever did the artistic variant of what we do used very permanent paint. So those arrows will be around for a long time. And again, we apologize for that. That's unexpected, unhelpful. I wish they hadn't done it. But we pressed on. We got through it. So, yeah, it was a great event.
Do you have any culprits in mind?
No, I don't even think we can go looking.
Well, I would suspect it's a computer programmer who knows about do loops. Sends you back over the thing over and over again.
It was a doom loop. It's exactly what it was. Yeah. People found themselves circling around the country club hill, and it's like, what are we doing here? So it was
tough.
I've
been here before.
Yeah. The event is, to kind of give you a feeling for the joys of P2P, despite the event the last 2 hours getting canceled because of heavy rain and some thunder, we all end up back at Jensen Point standing there in the pouring rain with our devil's tacos, which are the treat we serve there. And everyone's just carrying on. Everyone's having a wonderful time standing in the rain, eating their tacos. It just shows that, I guess, a mix of good athletics and unbelievable amount of endorphins, and everyone's having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
It was great. It was fun.
Typical Northwesterner standing in the rain eating a picnic. Right?
It was type 2 fun.
So, hey, Kevin, how about you?
Hey, I'm glad to say that I have the streamers on my bike. I was there on the course before Bruce. He was able to direct me in the proper direction so I didn't go, off the edge of Maury Island. So much appreciate that. Let's see. Otherwise, I do have an announcement to make before I get on to the rest of the news of the week. There's a group on the island now called Island Navigation Network. They're a committee of the Vashon Maury Community Council, and they're taking on a very serious issue, is the increasing what we're hearing about opioid and fentanyl issues. And unfortunately, our island wish we were immune, but in fact, we are not. So what this group is doing is they're sponsoring an open house at the Land Trust building. The hours are 11 to 2. There's going to be two presentations at 11 and 12:30. You can pop in for about a 20-minute discussion. They are going to be working with organizations where you can stop by and learn about these organizations. VARSA, of course, with Vashon Youth and Family Services, is also involved. The VIFR's Mobile Integrated Health Group is going to be there as well. So if you have the opportunity to drop by, and I'm looking for the date when this is going to happen. And interestingly, on my little announcement here, it's not on the
It lineup. Is Saturday. It's this Saturday the 28th.
The 28th. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know, Amy, you have some great insight into this issue on the islands, and I don't know if you wanted to comment on the event coming up.
Yeah, no, I encourage folks to go and learn more. And if you do want to get connected with Narcan or test strips, you can do that with the VIFR staff who are going to be there.
Absolutely. So, all right. Looking forward to people attending that. Otherwise, in the sort of news of the week, Susie and I are back out on the boat. And so we had a delightful opportunity to stop by and visit with some other quartermaster folks in Gig Harbor, including Rick of the Paradise Valley Music Hour. So Rick and I decided to continue on, and Susie, for another couple of days, we're up here in Eagle Harbor. Rick is not only a voice of Vashon, you can hear his hour-long music featuring local artists on Wednesdays at 3 every week. But he's also a musician himself. And so if you show up at the Coop, particularly for that John Prine look back, Rick's going to be there. So you not only have a chance to hear Rick, but you can see him at the Coop. And we've been having a great time sort of floating around in South Puget Sound. So that's how the week's been going so far.
Cool. Sounds like a pretty exciting week. Truman.
Been good.
What's going on with you?
Well, I'll throw out one more PSA before I get into mine, and that is that following our show is, of course, Captain Joe, and following his at 1:30 is Adventures in Recovery, and that is featuring Tom Walson from Vashon Youth and Family Services, and he is really a terrific guy. He's doing a great job with his show. He's talking about recovery from all kinds of things, not only drug and alcohol, but, you know, personal tragedy or trauma. Anyway, it's a great show, so I highly recommend you sticking around at 1:30 to hear that. My week started with a bang. Friday night, sorry, I had to get my day right. I did go to the Vashon Opera Otello, and I'm telling you, these folks are amazing, just truly amazing. You know, I know we had two of the principals, Aaron Brooks and Chad Armstrong, who played Otello and Iago, and they were both just truly amazing voices. And in fact, a very, very funny event during the curtain call where they were getting their accolades. When Chad came out, who performed as Iago, of course, everyone booed him. He laughed, and then he applauded everyone, you know, for booing. Of course, everyone was laughing while they were booing him, you know, but because he's such an evil villain. I mean, he's really evil in this play. Just terrific. And as Craig said, I got to go to a church on Sunday. You know, Molly had a good thing that she said about that. She said she really enjoyed it, probably the best writing ever, and the music was very good, but somehow there was not a combination of music and the acts. I mean, it didn't gel as well as some of the original Church of Great Rain. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, that's a recommendation I would make to them to move the music into more of the, you know, to make it flow better. But it was just over the top, fantastic. Oh, and one other thing. On Saturday, I did go up to Palouse Winery. Bruce Ferris had two friends, a vibraphone player and a guitarist, and they were fabulous, just amazingly good. So I actually got out and about this week. Pretty fun.
Sounds like it. So my week was not as exciting as everybody else's, but in a different way exciting. Sunday, I got to go see the Gray Whale Bones. Oh. That are at the Coop, the Vashon Nature Center, has sort of cleaned those bones out, and they're reassembling the skeleton. And hopefully they're going to hang it in the Vashon Center for the Arts. Whoa. For about 5 years up in the atrium. So it'd be a magnificent way to see how really big a gray whale is, a skeleton of a gray whale. I think the skull alone weighs about 500 pounds.
Wow.
So pretty amazing. Yeah. The other thing I did on Monday, had the opportunity to go see the unveiling of the Lucy Durand mural at Chautauqua Elementary School. And it's spectacular. It's 20 feet tall. It's all done with spray paint.
Really?
There's a video out there. If you're interested, let me know. I'll send the link to you.
The ultimate tag.
Yeah. Well, this artist was originally a tagger. He's a Puyallup native artist. But he was originally a tagger. And just watching him sort of put this thing together freehand is pretty amazing. Hmm. So that was very, very moving. And Brandon Raynon from the Puyallup Tribe Historical Commission there was there and talked about Lucy and her story and sort of how she stood up and fought for her people and made a very powerful plea for should talk elementary school students to do the same thing, to fight for what they feel is right. So that was good. And then on, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, went to the Mukai Barreling Plant for the ceremony where King County has handed over ownership of the barreling plant to the Friends of Mukai. So it actually has finally brought together the house and garden and barreling plant into one property. So a pretty productive week for historic Vashon, at least.
Yeah, no kidding.
So before we jump into talking with Bruce Morser and his work on Vashon, let me talk about today as a significant day. Today is National Bisexual Day and Pot Pie Day. Now, I'm not sure what to make of that.
A combination or what?
I'm not sure any of us should necessarily comment on that, but it seems an interesting combination.
Yeah.
I found this fascinating. In 1387, so height of the medieval period, one of the most extravagant medieval English feasts ever recorded was held for Richard II and John of Gaunt in London. It included 14 salted oxen, 120 sheep, 1,200 pigeons, and 11,000 eggs.
That's what we had at P2P.
Yeah.
In the form of tacos, I assume, right?
And salted oxen.
Yes.
It's been too long. I really miss salted oxen.
Salted oxen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, just, you know, had to bring that back into the rotation.
And those pigeons. Yeah. Those pigeons, right, yeah. Mm. So on this day in 1779, John Paul Jones, war hero known as the father of the U.S. Navy, achieved a dramatic victory over at the HMS Serapis aboard the USS Bonhomme Richard. This is where he said, when asked to surrender after his boat had been sort of almost demolished, he called back to the English, "We have not yet begun to fight." And ultimately he won the battle, even though the Bonhomme Richard sunk and he had to sail off in the Serapis, but he won. So let's switch gears and move over to Bruce Morser and talk about Bruce Morser's work on Vashon. So welcome back to the Brown Briefly. We had you here a couple weeks ago with Jeff Hoyt with your Passport to Pain hat on.
Yeah.
So now you've got your Bruce Morser artist hat on. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how living on Vashon has influenced your art.
Yeah, that's a broad question. I guess the point of me being here is I have made my living over the years as an illustrator, but that is really the way to own a home and so on, and that I've been much more interested in pursuing a bunch of different creative angles throughout life, and that's where it really applies to Vashon. Vashon is unlike the town I grew up in. I've said this a number of times in other forums, that I grew up on the East Coast outside of Boston, and it was very much a town where, it was a prosperous town where there was art, but it was sort of always over there, and people eagerly spent money on art and promoted art and went to the concert and went to the symphony and went to, but it was always sort of over there, and you rarely saw people who actually made art. Somehow we were all kind of filed off in some other corner kind of thing. And it was always sort of, you know, as I was growing up, people were sort of saying to me, "Are you really sure you want to do the art thing?" And in that I was no good at anything else, it was, didn't really have a choice to make there. But that when I first came to Vashon, which really struck me, I mean, literally the day I moved here, I was returning the van to Seattle, and I was taking the ferry back to the island. And my first kind of my first ferry ride home, and this is, you know, 8 years ago or something, and people used to sit only in clusters on the PO, on the car boat. There was no PO boat, and I would just wander around the, you know, trying to look at the pictures on the wall or just smile at people, and a group of, you know, 8 people in a booth said, "No, come over, join us so I did, and they said, you know, "What are you doing? You just moved to the island, what do you do?" And I described that I was kind of a struggling starting up illustrator and a fine artist who trying to show in galleries and so on. And they went around this booth and they introduced themselves. They're all super nice. Only like half of them were artists, like visual artists, and the other half were lawyers. And then my real shock was I realized that they're all intermarried. And it's like, wait a minute, can you do that? That was not something we did back on the East Coast. And it set me off in this right track of like realizing that, oh, Vashon is going to be a very different experience. And then over the time, I quickly met a whole bunch of people, and including a couple of you here, and that instantly began to realize, oh, arts are absolutely at the core here. You didn't sort of provide something in the shadows that then might be accepted in a public way. Your actual action of making art was very public, and that was very much appreciated here. By living on the island, it almost sort of gave me the extra permission and boost I needed to really just make art my life, as opposed to something I was kind of quietly doing in the side and then trying to have, you know, a higher level of decorum on the other. I just dropped that and realized, I guess I'm an artist. I guess that's what I do. And I was totally unwilling to admit that or say that before moving to Vashon. It took me a couple of years here, too, to get used to that. But then we realized, okay, all right, I guess I'm an artist. So Vashon had that huge impact on my life. It totally changed who I let myself be.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's interesting that people come to Vashon and they find that sort of core element here, whether it's the arts, whether it's music, you know, whether it's theater. I mean, there is a very, very alive sort of art community on Vashon, you know, in all its forms. And to tap into that early must have been really transformational for you.
It became kind of obvious, like, why? So I was part of one of the many waves that have moved to the island, and that wave obviously was infused with a bunch of creativity and art making of all kinds. And I was, oh, so that's why Julie and I came here. It wasn't just bike riding. Okay, that clears that up.
Of course, all those other artists had lawyer spouses who helped
support them while they could do it. You know, I've said this many times. You've probably heard me say it, but I always say that, you know, Vashon has a population of 11,000. 50,000 of them are musicians and the rest are artists. So there you go, right? Yep. Well, I guess there's another 50,000 that are attorneys that go with that, right?
I think that's right.
So you know, whereabouts in Massachusetts? You said it's a small town outside of Boston.
Combination of Wellesley, Massachusetts, with the home of Wellesley College and so on. And I have both a mother and a sister who went to Wellesley College. Huh? So we're very much in, you know, infused into that. And it is a spectacular campus. I'm not a huge fan of my hometown. I don't go back there, that sort of thing. Yeah. But then we also split our time with Gloucester, Massachusetts, which was one cool place. Yeah. Gloucester's a remarkable combination of things.
I've been used to fly into Boston a lot, and occasionally we'd rent a car and drive, you know, around the beautiful, beautiful area. Those coastal towns were just amazing. One of the things you said you were an illustrator. What kind of, quote, illustrations were you doing, or are you doing?
Very expensive ones, Drew.
Good. That's good.
No, I wish that was the case. I've been, how do you say this? I've been really, really fortunate in the career. I've like a number of people in the arts, I have backed my way through life. I have not aggressively pursued anything, but I keep backing up and backing up, and the next opportunity seems to pull into my peripheral vision, and I kind of head over towards that. And I all throughout college years and so on, I was a painter and a drawer, and I used to make big photorealistic paintings and those sorts of things. And those were hard to do and even harder to sell. So I was kind of looking for something to do. And when illustration came along, I had first worked for an advertising agency as a young art director. And I was terrible at it. That was an entirely different thing. I didn't even understand it. But my very first real pro job was, I have the honor of admitting that I'm the guy who wrote and illustrated the instructions for how to put on no-nonsense pantyhose.
Really?
That is my first job in this world. And I realized it's like, oh, this is obviously not fine art, but this is, I could make something and actually sell it, a little drawing of somebody putting on pantyhose. And that was like, oh, I could do this. And it was kind of cool then to go to stores and see that there are millions of these little illustrations everywhere. It's so different than working for 2 months on a large painting that sure. ends up in somebody's wall and you never see it again. That was intriguing to me. And then that little tiny nascent thing, I realized I should leave advertising as an art director. And I switched to illustration where I was making the images that advertising would buy. And then I began to realize, to link to what I first said, I've had an unusual career. Most illustrators find a niche and they make a kind of thing. And for some reason, I've done a lot of technical illustrations for magazines like National Geographic, yep. where you see the inside of things, or you know how the brain works, or what's inside the Acropolis, or those kinds of things, where I have to learn about a subject matter at great length. But I also do, anyone who knows me will laugh at this, I do fashion illustration. I am maybe the least capable person on that topic. I am not a fashion-oriented person, but I illustrate fashion. I do a lot of portraiture and all kinds of different imagery that helps basically explain things to other people, whether it's somebody, what they look like, or how something's put together. So that's kind of the illustration I do.
I find that absolutely fascinating because I love that kind of work. I'm just racking my brain as you were speaking, trying to think of the name of this guy. But there's the fellow that does line drawings of castles, and he explains.
Oh, Macaulay.
The,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah. Oh, phenomenal. Yeah. I love that work. So, yeah. Anyway.
That is kind of the trick I've always had. What I've tried to do in my career, especially on those kinds of things, mm-hmm. is I try to get somebody to stop and then from flipping pages, or right. flip the page and right. wait a minute, what was that? And turn back,
exactly.
and then look at it again. And then if I really win, that's when they get down on their hands and knees on the ground and spread the map out and look at it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to have happen.
One more comment. Not only are you a terrific artist in drawing and painting, but your mechanical work. I mean, the work done at the exhibit done at the Vachon Center for the Arts is just over the top, phenomenal. Thanks. I mean, that really strikes me. I love that.
I was going to ask a quick question. You said you started out in that area drawing pantyhose, and did that influence the work that you did for Starbucks when you first started there?
I'm only going to lightly touch that.
thank goodness.
I want to correct you, Craig. I didn't draw pantyhose. I drew somebody putting pantyhose on. There's a big difference there. It's funny. I did. I have done over the years, or actually in the early part of my career, a bunch of drawing for Starbucks, and it was interesting. If I showed you that image, you would probably know if you've been around this area or anywhere in the country. You would, oh, I remember that image, and it was a job that I tried to turn down 4 different times, and the art director kept coming back to me and saying, please, just try this. And I'm like, this is dumb. He wanted a cutaway illustration where you can kind of ghost through things, you see through things. And his grand plan was to show this cutaway image of a cup of coffee. So I think we're talking about a white paper cup, and there's like brown liquid in it. What are we cutting away to here?
More brown liquid.
Exactly. Yeah. How does that work? And I had to create something to get that look across, to something that was in this guy's head. And Doug Osborne out there, an art director, thank you, sir. You made my career. He forced me basically into doing this job, and I had to create a technique to get the job done to Starbucks' satisfaction. And that became my career. That style became what I've been known for even to today.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of cutaway, you did a lot of that for National Geographic, right?
Yeah.
You know, those kind of like, Alaskan fisher trawlers. And
yeah.
Did you do the Star Trek one? Or was
yeah.
that, yeah, you
yeah,
did Star Trek.
I did,
right?
Yeah.
The Enterprise, right.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you, so my job really is, I live a 101 level of life where I don't, I only need to know things to a 101 level and then communicate that to the world, because that's all they want to hear too. And if I get to the 201 level, then I'm in too deep and I need to move on. And so the job is basically to bone up on a subject as much as I can, just suck in as much information to create an image that solves that 101 level of knowledge. So something like Star Trek's Enterprise was fascinating to me. So, you know, I was never a Trekkie, and I was embarrassed because I was gathering information. I'd be standing in these Star Trek stores where there are these some serious Star Trek nerds there.
Yeah.
And we're all standing there together looking over these things, and they're all asking me these questions like, I don't know. I don't think I'm one of you, but this is pretty cool. This is pretty interesting. And the more I learned about the Enterprise, they had an Enterprise manual, and you realize that it had only been roughly figured out, and that there were actually floors on the Enterprise that were only 3 feet tall. So I had to do the math. I had to go and create the perspectives and work the math out to have these number of floors with this dimension of spacecraft. And I realized it's like, you know, these top three floors are only 3 feet tall. So there were funny things like that that would come out. But you're right. It's this job of trying to learn as much as I can in as short a period as I can about you name it. You know, doesn't matter, a huge range of subjects.
But you become the sort of ultimate source of Star Trek Enterprise, right? I mean,
I know a lot about the Enterprise.
and how many kids go to that cutout drawing to sort of figure out, okay, how do you get from engineering to whatever, you know, exactly.
I know where sick bay is. I mean, I actually know where it is. And some of the details of that. I know all that kind of stuff.
Which model? Are we talking the D?
You've got me out of my element. This is the very first one.
Oh,
this is the
A.
One from my youth. Yes.
Oh,
so do you know the numbers? Is 17? What's the
yeah,
number?
Yeah, 1701.
1701.
Yeah,
yes.
Dash, and right. Then you got the A was Kirk's Enterprise.
You're gonna have to add Trekkie right. To
to Amy's introduction. There. That's right.
And surrounding the image of the starship itself were a bunch of. It's kind of what I do. I mean, I have to add things to it to kind of spark it up a little bit. And so there's a portrait of Kirk, but there's also a diagram of known space, so where Klingon Empire is, and those kinds of things. So I had to understand all that stuff too, which is just fascinating. So I can raise hell at a cocktail party on any subject for about 3 minutes,
yeah.
And then I have to go get another drink because
yeah.
I've run out of my
That's
knowledge.
All you need. That's all you need. And then you let it go from there. You let it spin.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get from drawing the Enterprise to the Honoring Project? Tell us a little bit more about that and how it came about and your process.
The Honoring Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Honoring
down
Center.
At VCA.
Yeah.
That's kind of a wild tale. So I am was very honored to be, not honoring, honored, or happy to be on VCA's board. And it had a long run at that from when it was VAA. And I was very fortunate to be there. I literally joined the board as the whole project came on. This was concurrent when Kay White's original gift had been given and the whole, you know, LMN Architects had been reserved and we entered this whole process. So I knew a great deal about the building and why it was built and how it was built and some of the issues around center. And there were a lot of challenges in getting that structure figured out, understood. So that it worked the best it could for, you know, all the organizations, the constituent groups, and yet not overlap other stuff on the island, and all those kinds of things. And when it finally came down to getting the permits, it was kind of interesting that easily the hardest permit to get, I mean, water, sewerage, all those sorts of things, we managed to cross those hurdles. But the one that we really stubbed our toe on was the historical part of King County. And it was a very original-looking crossroad there at center, and we all kind of realized that this is kind of good. And we had a building that was Zarth's old garage, but it was in horrible condition, and the building was actually frameless. There was no frame to the building. It was literally built as a birdcage. You know, like a cricket cage. You ever seen those? A zillion little. It was a building built out of 1x4, literally 1x4. The whole thing. It was a cricket cage, and it was kind of a leaning imploding cricket cage. Yeah, yeah. And if people are going to get out safely, we had to do something. So the and the county wisely too pushed us hard. It's like, no, this is an interesting place. Don't just get rid of the building. You got to do something about it. We knew we couldn't preserve the building. We couldn't use the building. What are we going to do? And the county finally said, if you can pay homage to the building within the new structure, then we'll give you permission to do this new building in terms of what the historical significance was. And we kept the milking shed back and behind it and some other things. And so at that point, Molly Reed turned to me and said, well, Bruce, you're an artist. Make something.
Oh, boy.
Like, oh, and as Tim Roden later on, who was the board chair at the time, said that, you know, King County probably would have bought onto a bulletin board, but that's just not my style. And the thing that where Bruce Holman and I have always been friends, but we really built a powerful friendship around this project because I desperately needed him to help understand that there was a much bigger story here, that this intersection was much bigger than just this kind of old-looking intersection, that it really, you could understand how the whole Northwest was developed, how it all came to pass based on kind of a lens, looking from center to see where it focused on Tacoma for a while and then switched its focus to Seattle for a while, and then it became the place that was geographically or community-wise the center of the island, but hardly the center of the activity. And it was a fascinating thing. So I felt compelled, and Bruce encouraged me. Bruce really moved me along. I would not have done the thing I'd done without Bruce's encouragement and support. This is a good opportunity to make something that is worth it, something that people on the island can go to, look at, and get involved in. And Janet and Tracy Bishop stood up and said, I got some money to help you out on this because it was going to break my back on that. And they helped me out a lot. And we got the thing done. Sorry for a long answer, yeah. But it's
fabulous.
It's an interesting path.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Maybe tell people a little bit about what the installation is. I mean, and let me recommend, if you haven't seen it, go to the Vashon Center for the Arts, walk into the side corridor, and see this incredible installation that Bruce put together.
And spend some time. Spend some time, right. Just because it takes time to really appreciate it, I think.
Sliding.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the biggest bulletin board you'll ever see. It is it's three-dimensional, two-dimensional. In my own fine art pursuit, which is a different category of what I do, I've always been interested in things that are read as two-dimensional surfaces but also work three-dimensionally. You'll see more of that next spring when I have a show coming up that will involve that kind of stuff. But the idea that it is several, the most simple form, are there several big wooden panels and acrylic panels and aluminum parts that are put together in a construction, in a framework that's on the wall. It's about 24 feet wide and about 16 feet tall, or maybe it's a little taller than that. And it's built in such a way that these, as Craig was saying, that these panels move back and forth. And these wood panels have drawing all over them. I literally stand there in the studio and draw on wood. Mm-hmm. And the idea came to me for that as I was digging back and learning more and more and more about the history of the island. It seemed to me like I would sit and talk to Bruce about something, and then I would have to like sort of sweep aside that whole lesson, and then Bruce would reveal for me another series of facts underneath that. And then I could push that aside, and then I could see below that and realize, oh, here's something else. And that this almost a physical act of moving panels of information back and forth to reveal something behind. And it struck me as that was a good way to understand the history of the island, that there are surfaces you look at, and if you can simply get past those figuratively or literally physically, that you can, it reveals kind of surprisingly, oh, here's something completely different, but it relates to what's on the surface, and you can just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. And that was fascinating. This is everything from the Pleistocene up to the current structure that's there.
Yeah. You know, Bruce, I am in awe of you. I really am. Every time I cracked open a National Geographic as a young boy. No, it was later.
But my instructions are to draw to a 12-year-old.
There you go. It works.
It's true.
But no, I am. And you say that you have a 101 level of the merits, the substance of what you're talking about. I swear to God, that's not the case. The great thing that it seems to me you have going for you is, one, you're a fantastic artist, both in many forms, and these technical illustrations. It's almost a shame to call them technical illustrations. You know, they're fabulous, and they bring you in. You sit there, I look at them, and I look at you know, oh that's where, you know, and then it all fits like a puzzle, and the imagination you have to and get to use with all of these different projects, it must be extraordinarily stimulating.
That's very kind, Greg. Thank you. I appreciate that. And the idea, I'm glad it works for you at that level, because the game I've always played is the technical stuff has to be there and it has to be right. And I have a reputation for getting most of the details right, except for Starbucks. But then there has to be an emotional hook. There has to be some reason where you're compelled to have another look. And it's like the installation at VCA seems to do that. People will come back and they'll bring somebody with them. Mm-hmm. And like when they're parents are visiting the island or their niece or something, they will drag them down there. I mean, it must be pretty dull around here, but they'll drag them there to have a look. And that to me is this kind of, it don't just show the information, kind of show the heart. There's another place that Holman really helped me on this, where it's like, for a good example of this, I was on that installation. I was thinking, should I explain things with words? Should I put a lot of words into this? And he just stopped me and said, no, don't use words. Use a very bare minimum of words. Hook the feeling, and people will understand it on their own. Mm. It was just, you know, super great advice.
Mm. It is good advice.
So as an artist, where do you find that, for instance, in this project? We can all imagine, but where did you, was it sort of organic and innate and it kind of flowed through your work? Or did you have something specific in mind, or how did you chase that?
Yeah, this is kind of the head and heart combo, where part of my job is to jam. It feels just like before exams in college, where you're just jamming all the stuff in your head, and I only have to remember this till, you know, Tuesday noon, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And but then I've got that in my head, but then I always go back to what is the emotion? What moves me? I can't make imagery unless I'm very moved by it. So, for instance, at that installation, it starts on the left-hand side with an explanation of the Pleistocene and the big Lake Russell that was here and that sort of thing. But it's all under kind of a canopy of trees. And so, like everybody else, I spent a lot of time wandering around in the woods out here or cycling around in the roads. And that feeling of like, what would it be like to just be in this cathedral of 200-foot trees? We don't have that anywhere on the island. And so I would get that feeling and just hover in that. And all of a sudden, my head is less involved, and then I can feel my heart is more involved. I literally get the sensation of moving from my head to almost a feeling in my chest of like, this is what I want to capture. And that's kind of where it comes from.
Follow up on that. What's the deal on the Vashon map project with the Heritage Museum? Is that something entirely different, or?
I turn to Bruce and say, "This is another fine mess you've got me into." This is another Holman thing. And as always, when I work with him, I feel this combination of challenge, but also, the man knows his stuff. He is a worthy lead. He's a worthy guide. Follow him. So he asked me, would I be involved in this creating maps to try and capture what the island was about? And maybe because we had worked on the installation down at Vashon Center for the Arts, my mind could work like that. It's funny, it was 2 weeks ago, I was here talking about P2P, which is, I probably know as much of the island as anybody does. There is no road I have not ridden down or path I haven't been on. I mean, I physically just over the years, I've gotten to know the place. And it was the map project was one of like a challenge to myself to, I understand it in, so I've been here 38 years or so. I know what it is and how it's changed over that period of time. But could I really pull myself back and bring potential viewers back with me to try to understand what the island looked like over, you know, the visual record doesn't go back that far. We only really get back to like 1870. There's a photo or two kind of thing. But, and then there's knowledge of what came before. But that's, can I pull people back to that? And that was the idea, to try to, by looking at these maps, it's funny, we use maps, which is such a kind of a linear way to do it. But that seemed like a good way that if you look at the maps and see the maps evolve one to the other, you really understand how, wow, we went from this absolute carpet of green that was very populated. A lot was going on here, but it all took place under this unbelievable cathedral carpet. And it was busy. And there was endless action. I live on Quartermaster Harbor, and I look out over the harbor, and I realize that we except maybe on the 4th of July, we have the same amount of boat traffic that was probably daily back 150, 200 years ago. And to try to get those kinds of images and then help people understand that. So 50 years later, there are almost no trees on the island. Literally, is 15 to 20% of the trees are left. And that how odd that would be and how emotionally, how different that would feel. And it wasn't just like the trees are gone. We went from this unbelievable cathedral forest to a stump field. I mean, we never get that across, but it was a big stump yard and probably very green because everything was growing around it. But it was also probably unable to see much of anything except when you could get a clear view, you could see water all around you, even from the center of the island. That's what that project's about, and I learned even more. Now when I ride my bike around on the island, I've been doomed to now see everything in kind of like a flow of years, or if I'm just riding around at P2P, I'm trying to see like, well, what was here? So we're, you know, if I'm up by Zarth's farm, very different than I'm at Zarth's garage, and then I can go by the old Zarth estate and look at it and realize, oh, yeah. Oh, wow. It started in the trees. It ended up totally in the open, and now it's descending back into the trees. I love that kind of feeling. Hmm. Sorry, I'm getting a little worried here.
No. Do you have a time frame on the... do you have an estimated time of completion on the map project? Or shouldn't I put you on the spot like that?
No. No, this puts the other Bruce on the spot. My part is mostly complete. And the maps, they're brilliant design. This is another Holman, you know, mind thing. It's just great. And that they will ultimately animate in a dramatic way. Right now, they're just is a presentation stage where you can see the different, as the maps dissolve one to the other, you can see this wild transformation on the island. But that ultimately, the greater distance of the project is to have each one of these tiny little icons that's on the map be an access point to a story. You'll click on each one of those things. And I'm not sure what the timeline is on that, but that would be very exciting when that happens. And then Bruce's total vision will finally come to fruition, and we'll be able to see this remarkable thing of this access to not only across time, but across kind of genre of activity, everything from what churches were there, what sawmills were there, where'd you buy your groceries, and how that evolved over time, and what things stayed the same, what things evolved, and that magic that now, it's funny, when I first moved to the island, no one was thinking about this, but the idea that the island was once a series of small towns and small, you know, education districts and small community centers and that sort of thing. And now we're a couple of big centers and you have all these cool little outposts, but that whole change.
Yeah, the maps, you can actually see them at the Vashon Heritage Museum. As Bruce said, they're sort of in display mode right now, almost like a screensaver. But there's a 1750 map, so before contact with Europeans, before European diseases. And then there's a 1890 map, a 1920 map, a 1960 map, and a 2020 map. And what you can see is they sort of dissolve from one to the next. You can sort of see how the island's changing, how ferry docks come and go, and community centers come and go, and schools come and go, and that kind of thing. So, cool. Yeah, ultimately it'll be a pretty fantastic way to understand the island.
The bigger, and this is, once again, blowing your horn here, Bruce, just because you have a nice name. You've helped me with these bigger issues, which are fascinating. The idea that prior to 1920-ish, no one really thought about Vashon Island is an island. I mean, people understood it was an island geographically, but it didn't matter. Everything was an island. Downtown Seattle was an island. Mm-hmm. Tacoma was an island. You're all these islands in the wilderness, and ours just happened to have water around it. But everything was its own little island, and they were all connected by the mosquito fleet. And that thought shift, not until we had cars here and that the community started to shift from all these little shoreline communities to a centralized community, that we began to really take on this idea of like, oh yeah, we are a separate island. We're not just another one of these communities in the wilderness kind of thing. And that, boy, when I captured that, there's so many things like that. The idea that Shwabs did not see the island in map view. We look at it as a map. So everyone, we all understand it as a map, hence it being an island. But Raina Holtz was really helpful to me on this one. She was also one of these brilliant minds that just made things so accessible to me. That they saw it, when they moved around, they saw it more like, almost like tunnels that you would move through the environment on these paths, on these routes. And they would sometimes cross each other, but they weren't looking at it as a plan view. They saw it more as this three-dimensional passage through your environment, and that we all think about it as a map. And it took me a while to get my head around that, but it made a huge difference in trying to understand what happened here.
Well, what do you think about it? They're looking at it from the water as well. I mean, there's that wall that's presented by those trees. And so, yeah, of course, it would make sense that there are tunnels to get you to the next little community or whatever. That I find that fascinating. Never got that concept. Yeah. Kevin.
Thank you, Bruce, for sort of laying out all of this history and how you've rendered it and how, where people have a chance to go see the work that you've done. We've talked a bit about Vashon Center for the Arts, VCA. I understand you have a solo show coming up at VCA next year. I also understand you have an important role at VCA, if you want to comment on that. And so I'm curious about, you know, what do you see in the next year and what do you see down the road for you in terms of carrying your art forward into the future?
It's such a simple question. I'm currently on the board, and I will be becoming the chair of the board in this next cycle. So that's very exciting for me in quite a handful. And it really is. It's really kind of a fantastic thing to be part of. It's one of the things I really want to throw my heart at on the island. It just seems to help so many people. I appreciate that. So I'm willing to work hard on that. I do have a show coming up in this. It'll be in April, the month of April, and it's a retrospective show, and it's. It's everywhere. It's in the gallery. It's in the lobby. It's in the two wings of the lobby. And Lin-Ann basically just said, it's about 4,000 square feet. Have at it, dude.
Wow.
And so that's what this is nice because my creative career has had all these different things. I mentioned them from portraits to big fine art pieces to these complicated installations to just hardball illustration for well-known magazines. And to bring all of this stuff, I probably have seven different pursuits that I've done over the years that are quite separate from each other. People would be surprised. One thing looks very different than the other. And to actually present it that way, all these different things. And then on April, is it 16th, I think, which is a Wednesday in the middle of April, I'll actually be giving a presentation in the K. White Hall That's a chance to really explain kind of not just my path, but what is creativity? Why is creativity so accessible to so many people and yet somehow so hard to do?
Should be fascinating.
Yeah, I'll let you know when I know what it's about.
Into the mind of Bruce Mercer. Is it going to be a cutaway like the Starship Enterprise?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Craig, tell us a little bit about next week.
Yeah, next week we're going to be talking about Orange Shirt Day, which is actually celebrated on the last day of the month, the day before, which would be Monday. But on Tuesday, we're going to have a guest, and we're going to talk about what is all otherwise known as the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, a remembrance of the Indian children who were forcibly abducted by the government agents and sent to some 500 government-funded schools around the United States, and oftentimes beaten in order to remove any semblance of their Indian culture. Sad chapter of history that is probably little less known than the Japanese internment. So that's what we're going to be talking about next week.
Great. So we're at the end of the show. So for Bruce Mercer, for Amy, Kevin, Truman, Craig, I'm Bruce Holman. See you next week on the Brown Briefly.